The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Stephen Smith, director of the USC Shoah Foundation Institute, founded by Steven Spielberg. We'll also have a visit from our two Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reform congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I must admit that out of all the varieties of TV shows that exist in the world, the one kind I have never liked, not even a little bit, is the reality TV show. I just can't figure out why watching other people's daily lives would be more interesting than living your own, or why putting a bunch of supposedly regular folks into a bizarre situation and seeing how they respond would somehow qualify as entertainment. To me, the whole Facebook and Twitter phenomena are closely related to this nearly obsessive interest in the trivia of other people's lives. Did you know that something like 4 million people want to know what Shaquille O'Neal had for breakfast? And that more than 5 million people each follow Britney Spears, Ashton Kutcher, and Lady Gaga, only two of whom practice Kabbalah in some form. In any case, the reality TV show thing still defies my ability to understand popular culture at this level, but I thought I could understand a popular show I noticed recently called Man vs. Food. Actually, Man v. Food, I think is how it's written. Starring, do people actually star in these shows? Anyway, starring Adam Richman. Look, I'm Jewish, I like to eat. So getting the hang of a show in which a Jewish guy goes around devouring large quantities of good food doesn't seem weird. I mean, whenever we Jews get together, we always either eat or talk about food or both. In fact, on a recent Shabbat morning hike and service, I ended up spending about a half hour discussing the relative merits of various brisket recipes. And if any of you remember going to a Catskills resort in its Jewish heyday, you know that eating large quantities of food definitely qualifies as a full-on Jewish competitive sport. As Jackie Mason once put it, Jews are always saying, we might have had dinner and drinks, but we didn't have cake yet. So the premise of Adam Richman's show, Man v. Food, is that he goes around exploring the cuisines of various regions and styles, and at the end he tries a restaurant challenge that involves eating a humongous meal or object, you know, a 10-pound hamburger, or a 48-ounce steak in a certain period of time, or super spicy chicken wings without drinking any water, or some such challenge. So when I found out that in mid-July, on Bastille Day, July 14th no less, Adam Richman was going to take on the Chompy's Ultimate Slider Challenge, I was intrigued. After all, Chompy's New York-style deli is the best-known Jewish deli in Phoenix, frankly in Arizona, and it was a proud sponsor of the Phoenix version of Two Jewish when we were on the air there regularly. I mean, a nice Jewish boy downing Jewish food in a Jewish deli. Could this possibly be more too Jewish? So, imagine my surprise and disappointment when I found out just what an ultimate slider, the food that Adam Richman was supposed to consume, consisted of. It is a mini challah filled with brisket, a mini latke, and a side of brown gravy, well and good, and then covered with Jack cheese. Jack. Cheese. Now, I don't know about you, and I don't really care who keeps kosher or doesn't, but a deli challenge that includes cheese on a brisket sandwich seems so wrong on so many levels. First of all, of course, it's a shanda, a major violation of even the appearance of traditional dietary regulations. Meat and dairy in one fell swoop of trafeness masquerading as Jewish food. But second of all, who the heck thought of screwing up brisket and latkes with cheddar cheese? What, Choppies forgot to add bacon to it and serve it with a shrimp cocktail on the side? Reminds me of the special I once saw advertised at a restaurant in L.A., a BLTB, bacon, lettuce, and tomato on a bagel. Oy vey. Well, in the spirit of this unusual appeal to culinary mongrelization, here's a bit of a classic old-time shtick from the late, great Mickey Katz, master of the silliest of Yiddish-American parodies, and his song, Knish Doctor.
Way down in Africa, a doctor in the jungle, you'll find a Knish Doctor who looks just like your uncle. The natives know him by the name of Jungle Yankel. He's like, ooh, hi, yeah, I'm in the main shape, he's in the face, yeah, ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, I've felt the Veronica's too.
Ooh, hi, yeah, ha, ha, I'm in the main shape, he's in the face, yeah, ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, I've felt the Veronica's too.
All day they come to him, the quetches and the kranke. They come to him in sizes, kilts, a breit and lange. He smells them on his mouth and then applies the bunkers. Ooh, hi, yeah, I'm in the main shape, he's in the face, ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, I've felt the Veronica's too.
Ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, I'm in the main shape, he's in the face, ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, I've felt the Veronica's too.
He doesn't have a fancy office or a chain of nurse. He makes his pills right in a grosser tub. And if your kepele is hiding, there's a song you stoop. Need a hatchet, he will hot gear up the cup.
Who's that?
He says, ooh, ha, yeah, ha, ha, and the ship is my face. Ooh, ha, yeah, ha, ha, I felt for those with pipic trouble, he prescribes half knitches. From Wimes he makes a mifle that is real delicious. He even davens and he schneids at local brisses. Ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, Mendel, may she pitch a pitch a patient. Come, Mendel, give a blues. This boy can blues from north. For Kempator and Yankele cooks hot cannibal soup. For ulcers he will chop some monkey liver. He don't belong to Blue Cross or a medical group. His diploma's from the Bwana Yeshiva.
Oh boy.
Ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, Mendel may ship, bitch, bitch, bitch. Ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, for folk that Veronica's too. Ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, Mendel may ship, bitch, bitch, bitch. Ooh, hi, yeah, ooh, hi, for folk that Veronica's too.
That's my son, the doctor.
Yes, that was Mickey Katz and his Knish Doctor. Of course, it helps if you understand Yiddish to understand Mickey Katz. Mickey Katz was entertainer Joel Gray's father. Joel starred in Cabaret and, by the way, went to my high school, Hamilton High, before I did. And Mickey Katz was also Jennifer Gray's grandfather, who starred in Dirty Dancing, which was set in the Catskills, where they would never, ever serve cheddar cheese on brisket. You know, I think even Mickey Katz at his wildest would not have approved of cheddar cheese on brisket. Well, on a more serious, if not more significant front, it is not often on Too Jewish we have the privilege of interviewing a member of the British Empire, an MBE, probably because they don't give out many of those. They only give them out in England, and we Jews don't usually get too involved in heraldry or royal awards. But we'll meet our first MBE here on Too Jewish, Stephen Smith. He's the director of the Shoah Foundation in Los Angeles, started by Steven Spielberg. Find out the whole story and his whole story when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace. But sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. Sometimes I think my brother Vinny and I are the luckiest guys in the whole wide world. You see, to us, Mama's is more than just a restaurant. It's a connection to our past. Back in New York, food was the center of our lives. Our family got together for almost any reason to enjoy the great Italian dishes our mom used to make. The scent of slow-cooking marinara. The distinct aroma of garlic simmering in olive oil. Pasta boiling on the stove. These are memories that remind me of family, friends, home. Our goal at Mama's is to serve more than just delicious Italian food. Sure, our pizza and calzones are outstanding. Our cheesecake is to die for. But we strive to serve you more. Call it atmosphere or mood. Or you can just call it love. We hope the next time you come into one of Mama's four locations, it'll become one of your pleasant memories. To Vinny and me, that's the measure of our success. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Hasidic Jewish reggae sensation Matis Yahu returns to the Rialto Theater on Monday, August 16th for an 8 p.m. show. Known for blending traditional Jewish themes with reggae, rock, and hip-hop beatboxing sounds, Matis Yahu is a true original. This one-night-only concert features music from his new album, Light, and chart-topping singles King Without a Crown and Jerusalem Out of the Darkness Comes Light. Matis Yahu's mix of Hebrew and English lyrics with a soulful reggae sound appeals to fans of all ages. Tickets are just $25 in advance or $27 at the door. Call the Rialto Theater box office at 740-1000 or visit rialtotheater.com.
We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Stephen Smith. He's the executive director of the USC Shoah Foundation Institute for Visual History and Education. He founded the UK Holocaust Center, that's United Kingdom, in Nottinghamshire, England, and co-founded the Aegis Trust for the Prevention of Crimes Against Humanity and Genocide. He's also the inaugural chairman of the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust, which runs the National Holocaust Memorial Day in the United Kingdom. 2009 Holocaust Memorial Day included over 500 public memorial events that he started, in a way. Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about what is unique about a Center for Visual History of the Holocaust?
Well, the story behind the Shoah Foundation Institute is that Steven Spielberg set out after Schindler's List to collect as many testimonies of Holocaust survivors as possible. 55 countries, 32 languages, 52,000 Holocaust survivors gave their testimony. And this is an absolutely unique voice, not only describing the intricate details of individuals' lives, but also giving, through the quantity of testimony, an absolutely vital message for the conscience of the world. And it's an amazing archive to be a part of.
What started you in the direction of Holocaust awareness, Holocaust education?
I went on holiday to Israel in 1981 when I was 13 years old, and I was the child of a Methodist minister. And I went to the Kotel, to the Western Wall in Jerusalem. And I just remember standing there thinking, how is it I come here as a Christian person to learn about my history and tradition? And when I see this place here, I don't understand what's going on. And from there, I began a journey of discovery about Judaism and Jewish history. But what kept coming back time and time again was this pernicious, violent history of anti-Semitism. And I kept asking, why? Why is this there, and what are we doing about it? And clearly, at the dark heart of the history of anti-Semitism was the Holocaust. And I began to really question what it was about West European Christian civilization that could end in such a disaster, and why it was that my generation wasn't addressing it. And this is now back in the early 1990s. And that's what started the journey.
You know, anti-Semitism, I answered that exact same question from a 12-year-old bar mitzvah student yesterday, and I'm still not sure I have the answer. What do you think, nothing like an easy question, what do you think the origin of this anti-Semitism is?
Well, I think clearly there are very deep-rooted religious reasons, and Christianity was very clearly trying to distance itself from Judaism as a tradition and demonstrate that it had superseded Judaism. But that's only one step away from them saying, if Judaism as a religion is no longer valid, then the Jews are no longer valid. And there you have to take steps to deal with that, the consequences of making that assertion. So that's the religious side of it. But then I think there is the social, economic, and cultural side of it, where Jews, as minority communities, were living in largely Christian environments, where I think there was a large amount of jealousy, and that leads to its own forms of hatred, in which the Jew becomes the other, and then once they are the other, they're not only one step away from being the scapegoat of all of society's ills. And once you get into that vicious cycle, it's extremely difficult to break out of it. I think the key thing we have to learn from this is that anti-Semitism was never the same thing twice. It's always been evolving and developing. And if we want to learn anything from history, is don't look back at the history of anti-Semitism, because there will be something new around the corner which will catch us by surprise. And we're starting to see that now, new forms of hatred towards Jewish people that we need to be alert to and to deal with and to be outspoken about.
It's an excellent point, and we'll continue to follow up with Stephen Smith, the executive director of the Shoah Foundation in Los Angeles, when we come back on Too Jewish this morning.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmaker's Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Temple Emmanuel and the Tucson Hebrew Academy are proud to introduce a great new learning opportunity for the whole family, the Taste of Judaism Family Class, Sundays, August 15th, 22nd, and 29th at 1 p.m. At the Taste of Judaism Family Class, adults enjoy an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, led by Temple Emmanuel's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Jason Holtz. Meanwhile, kids enjoy their own fun program of Jewish stories, crafts, and activities. Call 327-4501 to sign up. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish food. The sessions are free and open to all, Jewish or not. Taste of Judaism, celebrating its 10th year as the most successful outreach program in the country, welcomes you. Isn't it time you came? In addition to the family class at THA, Taste of Judaism sessions are offered in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson. Call Mila at 327-4501 for more information and to register today for the Taste of Judaism family class.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch, or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, or downloading us at the website or at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. You know, one of the fascinating aspects of the Shoah Foundation, our guest this morning, Stephen Smith, is the director, is its attempt to preserve a world that is rapidly vanishing, an effort to record the story of every single survivor of the Holocaust before they are gone. Of course, that is not the only aspect of Jewish culture that is in danger of vanishing. The Yiddish language, which was so central to the Eastern European Jewish culture, which was nearly annihilated during the Holocaust, Yiddish survives, especially in the ultra-Orthodox Hasidic world. But for many years, it has been considered a kind of dying language, at least in its status as the cultural and intellectual language of many Jews, and even in its role as the lingua franca, the common spoken tongue of Ashkenazic Jews around the world. And yet, Yiddish, this ever-dying language, as it has been called, is still with us, and it has even penetrated the popular lexicon in humorous expressive words like chutzpah, maven, and schlemiel, and books like Yiddish for Dummies and Yiddish with Dick and Jane that hit the bestseller list. In fact, There's a new movie coming out that perhaps epitomizes this sillyization of Yiddish. It stars Steve Carell, and it's called Dinner for Schmucks. You know, schmuck, a Yiddish word. You know some of them. Well, the movie sounds awful, to be honest, but, you know, Steve Carell can be funny for, you know, a non-Jew, a goy. Anyway, Yiddish, while a very funny language when it wants to be, is much more than that. Here's a lovely, evocative Yiddish song expressing beautifully the poignance of a young boy's desire to preserve the Sabbath and his request to his grandmother not to end it and send him back to school and the mean rabbi.
Oy boben yozog noch nit got fun Avraham Vos is dos mit dir heinter heim In a mariv seit is noch die Sun nit vergangen Oy boben yo vart noch a vay In a mori the sight is noch die Sun nit vergangen Oy boben yo vart noch a vay Zu sternitem Frieden, dem heiligen Schabbes, die Stille, die heilige Ruhe. Meset noch nicht scheinen in Himmeln kein Stern, oi wart noch a bissle zu. Der Gott von Avraham, spannt uns zurück ein in den schweren Tagen täglichen Jahr. Zu tragen dem Gallus, dem Cheder, dem Reben, dem Olen, die Deig ist von der Da bleibt wie versteinert die Bobbe beim Fenster. Sie ist zu mein Betten wie treu. Oi Gott von Avraham und es keikelt darauf sich. A trail of entum killer shore. My God, for now, Rome, when the sky cold are observed. A trail of entum killer shore.
That was Boben Yu, a beautiful Yiddish song of longing, heart, and love, as sung by, well, me. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
We visit weekly with a great restaurateur, Janos Weidler of Janos Restaurant at the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So what's going on this summer at Janos and the J-Bar?
We've got so much going on, it's hard for me to keep it all straight, but I'm going to try. We've got our summer music series that you know about. We have our summer passports where you dine, and the more times you dine, you collect stamps for free dinners at Janos or J-Bar. Our Janos summer samplers at $19.95, our J-Bar summer samplers at $12.95. At Janos, our 10 terrific taste menu, four courses, 12 different items for $50, drink specials, wine specials. Summer's our time.
I'm starving.
Well, come on over, Rabbi.
What's the phone number for Janos and the J-Bar?
615-6100.
And the website?
www.janos.com. We've got all our menus up. We've got the summer music schedule up.
And don't forget all the great samplers. We will see you at Janos and the J-Bar, J-A-N-O-S.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we talked last week about the lachrymose theory of Jewish history, as you noted, the idea that our history is just a bunch of sad times to weep over. But that's not really a great or accurate description of Jewish history, is it?
I don't think so. You know, we tend to characterize things with sort of Madison Avenue labels and sound bites and not to go into any depth. So in Sunday school, we all learned about the golden age of Spanish Jewry, which wasn't all so golden. But the fact is that during the first 2 to 3 centuries of Muslim rule in Spain, which began in 711, certainly by 750 and until at least the 11th century, Jews in Spain occupied all sorts of incredibly prestigious positions, which we've not yet fully done even in the United States. I mean, Jews were de facto prime minister, foreign minister,
head of the military,
secretary of the treasury, whatever, not to mention great leading lights in intellectual life, the court physician.
Poetry, I mean, creativity,
right.
In other ways.
Science, whatever. I mean, Jews were incredibly successful. And this is something that has repeated itself throughout Jewish history. We tend to think that, you know, only in 20th century America, with all of our freedom and all of our civil rights and human rights, did we acquire the ability to occupy positions like this. But that simply reflects our ignorance of history and what many historians have called the lachrymose version of Jewish history, which is it's just a bunch of stuff to cry over and beat our chests over on Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, we do focus on the destruction and the tragedies and whatever, but sometimes I think it behooves us to look back at all the good stuff that goes way back in history, certainly under the Romans in certain places and at certain times, Jews thrived. Under the Muslims, not only in Spain, but also in the Ottoman Empire.
Ottoman of Turkey.
And we shouldn't forget that in, you know, 19th and early 20th century Europe, even in countries which had a history of sort of genteel anti-Semitism like the UK or France, Jews became prime ministers. Or people of Jewish origin or people of Jewish ancestry.
Disraeli or Leon Blum,
right.
Or others.
Certainly sure. People who would have been considered by Hitler or by many anti-Semitic country clubs even today
Jewish.
To
sure.
Be Jewish.
Of course.
Even if they denied it by virtue of saying, well, I was raised a Protestant or a Catholic. My grandfather was a Jew. So what? We both know that the world would label these people Jews and that despite all odds, they succeeded. Now, an interesting question is, so between this golden age in Spain and the so-called emancipation that followed the age of Napoleon, how did Jews in Europe, in the exceptional cases, acquire great fortunes, great fame, great reputations? How did they become the sort of court Jews or the Hofjuden who were at crucial moments in Jewish history able to prevent the destruction, the wholesale destruction or expulsion of various Jewish communities? That's a question worth examining maybe in some other discussion.
Sounds good. Tom, thanks. And you're right. So much of our history is not just dark, but also of great accomplishment and success. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Kitty, Frida, and Hannah are in Shalom Hospital's maternity unit, each of them awaiting news of their own daughter's impending giving birth. A nurse comes over to Kitty and says, "Mrs. Levy, I have wonderful news for you. Your daughter has just given birth to twins. She's fine, and you're now the Bubby of two lovely, healthy boys. Mazel tov." So Kitty gets up to leave, and she turns to Frida and Hannah and says, "Oy, what good news I've heard. My daughter Natalie just gave birth to twins, but what's strange about that is my son-in-law works for the Twin Brothers restaurant." A little later, a nurse goes over to Frida and says, "Mazel tov to you, Mrs. Gold. Your daughter has just given birth to triplets. She's fine, and you're now the Bubby of three lovely, healthy girls." As Frida gets up to leave, she turns to Hannah and says, "Oy, what good news I've just heard. My daughter Susie gave birth to triplets. But what's strange is that my son-in-law works for the Triple Valleys Water Company." On hearing this, Hannah turns pale, gets up, and says, "Oy vey, I'm leaving with you before it's too late." "But why?" asks Frida. "Your daughter didn't give birth." "Because," says Hannah, "my son-in-law works for 7-Up. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. We welcome our Too Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. So I wanted to continue with another grandfather story from that same trip of his. And you know, so many Jews and Jewish families in America have their own immigration story and have their own Ellis Island story in particular. So many Jews having come through New York and that port in particular. And my grandfather, while not an immigration story, he does have a story from that. And what happened was after his little adventure, which I mentioned last week in England and in Germany and Europe, he took the boat across the Atlantic all the way to New York. And on the way over there, he ended up losing his passport, though he suspected it was stolen. That same passport he kind of, you know, shoved in the SS officer's face. And he arrived at the port of New York. And because he didn't have his passport, he was considered undocumented. We know a little of this in Arizona. And he had to go through the undocumented, you know, immigrant line there in Ellis Island. And he was standing in this line largely with people who were from Eastern Europe, immigrants who spoke no English. And there were some bureaucrats sitting at a desk just like stamping papers. And he clearly was bored with his work and didn't like his job. And he would just kind of scowl when the next person came up in line and say, "Do you speak any English?" And usually he was met with completely confused stares because the person generally did not speak English. But my grandfather was waiting in line and frustrated with the treatment and frustrated with the situation. And finally he comes to the front. Now keep in mind, my grandfather was raised in a very British tradition in South Africa and had that kind of British elitism about him. So when he got to the table and this guy looks up and says, "So do you speak any English?" My grandfather stares down his nose at him and says, "Far better English than you."
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story next week. And now, a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Re'eh, the fourth Sedra in the book of Deuteronomy, following a sequence of marvelous Torah portions with yet another remarkable text. Re'eh includes one of the most radical statements in its own way in the entirety of the Torah. If there will be among you a poor man, one of your brothers, within one of your gates in the land which the Lord your God gives you, you shall not harden your heart or shut your hand from your needy brother. You shall instead certainly open your hand to him. Give him enough for whatever he lacks, whatever he wants. This commandment is not simply to provide for the needs of the needy, not just to alleviate suffering, but to give them what they really want: sustenance, security, a decent life. It is much more than we seek to provide in our own society, in which the safety net seemingly has as many holes as net these days. It is a powerful, dramatic statement. Open your hand. Surely give the needy poor what they ought to have. This is part of a strong economic agenda in Deuteronomy. No one is supposed to accumulate great wealth or enormous power. No one is to be left destitute either. Most importantly, our moral obligation is to see to it that none of our brothers and sisters is left without what they need in order to survive. This is a foundational lesson in the morality of giving. Give not only what someone needs in your opinion, give her or him enough to live reasonably and with dignity. That is the true measure of tzedakah, of living justly and in righteousness. Judaism is at heart a pragmatic ethics. So after exploring the Talmudic dictum that even those who receive charity need to give something to those with less, the rabbis conclude that tzedakah is meant to be a percentage of your income, not a hard figure, and that the same percentage, whether it's 10% or 5% of your gross income or another number, should be given whether times are good or bad. It's true that when there is less income, there will be a smaller absolute amount donated, but the percentage, and thus the integrity of the individual's morality, must be preserved. And so open your hand, and do so freely and generously, in tough times and at all times. When we come back on Two Jewish in a few moments, we'll hear from our exceptionally articulate guest, Stephen Smith, and find out how a Christian comes to head one of the most important Jewish Holocaust institutions in the world, when we return on Two Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from guest newscaster Rabbi Jason Holtz.
Good morning. A recent survey conducted by Gallup and published by Forbes on global well-being has Israel ranked 8th in the world for happiness. Thousands of people in 150 countries around the world were polled for the survey, which was conducted between 2005 and 2009. According to the results, the happiest countries in the world, in order, are Denmark, Finland, Norway, Sweden, the Netherlands, Costa Rica, New Zealand, and then tied for 8th are Israel, Canada, Australia, and Switzerland. That would make Israel the happiest country on the Asian continent. A group of almost 200 Orthodox rabbis, educators, and mental health professionals recently released a statement of principles on the importance of treating individuals who are lesbian or gay with dignity and respect. They write, "We, the undersigned Orthodox rabbis, Roshei Yeshiva, Ramim, Jewish educators, and communal leaders, affirm the following principles with regard to the place of Jews with a homosexual orientation in our community. All human beings are created in the image of God and deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. Kivot HaBriot. Every Jew is obligated to fulfill the entire range of mitzvot, commandments, between person and person, in relation to persons who are homosexual or have feelings of same-sex attraction. Embarrassing, harassing, or demeaning someone with a homosexual orientation or same-sex attraction is a violation of Torah prohibitions that embody the deepest values of Judaism." While they later say that their view is that heterosexual marriage is the only appropriate vehicle for sexual relationships, they go on to say, "Communities should display sensitivity, acceptance, and full embrace of the adopted or biological children of homosexually active Jews in the synagogue and school setting. And we encourage parents and family of homosexually partnered Jews to make every effort to maintain harmonious family relations and connections." NBA All-Star and former Rookie of the Year Amare Stoudemire, formerly of the Phoenix Suns, now playing for the New York Knicks, is in Israel. Stoudemire, who is Jewish, is visiting for the first time. Stoudemire told the press that the Holy Land has always been high on my list of places to visit. When this opportunity arose, I wasn't going to push it off any longer. I'm so excited to be here, see all the important historical sites, learn Hebrew, and to get a better understanding of my heritage. The chief rabbinate in Israel recently decided that rabbis are no longer allowed to sing when officiating at weddings. Chief Rabbi Yonah Metzger says, "We were brought to the subject following repeated complaints that this hurts both the public and the rabbis." In similar news, the Reform movement in the United States is considering a similar prohibition following my ordination. I'm Jason Holtz, and that's the news of Jews around the world.
We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish Stephen Smith, the executive director of the USC Shoah Foundation Institute for Visual History and Education, founded originally by Steven Spielberg. Stephen Smith founded the United Kingdom Holocaust Center in Nottinghamshire, England, and co-founded the Aegis Trust for the Prevention of Crimes Against Humanity and Genocide. He was the inaugural chairman of the Holocaust Memorial Day Trust, which runs the National Holocaust Memorial Day in the United Kingdom. Last year, more than 500 public memorial events came from that source. Stephen has a unique quality to, I believe, any of the 8 years of guests on Two Jewish. He is a member of the Order of the British Empire, an MBE. How did it feel to get that?
Oh, it was a great feeling, actually. You know, it's one of those things you don't expect to get. It's you don't know it's coming, and then you get a letter from the Queen to say that you know, she's inviting you to become a member of the order. And you know, I had quite low expectations, oddly enough. I didn't build up any expectations, but to go to the palace and to be thanked by, you know, the Queen on behalf of the country, in my case for opening the UK Holocaust Centre and making a contribution to knowledge around the Holocaust, was very meaningful. And particularly because I'd worked with many survivors of the Holocaust who over the years had felt that, you know, the Holocaust had been neglected in our country, and just to have that moment of recognition that it was important was very meaningful, actually.
I've always felt that some countries have come to terms with the Holocaust more rapidly than others. I think, interestingly, Germany came to terms with the Holocaust long before, say, Austria did. How do you think your own country has done?
Well, the UK was silent for the best part of 50 years. In fact, really, the reason that my brother James and I opened the Holocaust Centre in 1995 was because we were just totally amazed at this amnesia, is the only way you could describe it, you know, national amnesia around the Holocaust. Interestingly, though it took a long time to actually... I think what there was probably in the UK was this feeling, you know, well, you know, we toughed it out. We're okay, Jack. You know, the Battle of Britain, we won that, and the Nazis were defeated, and it's all okay. We now move on. And there was a kind of, there was something quite dangerous about that, because it wasn't recognizing the real threat that the Holocaust posed to our civilization as a whole. Interesting enough, though, once the British got a hold of it, which is really only the last 10 years, there's been a lot of talk about anti-Semitism in Britain and the fact that the Holocaust education is coming off the curriculum. That is an urban myth, because actually I've just come from the UK about a year ago, and Holocaust education is taught at various levels across the curriculum. We have a national curriculum, teachers have to teach it, and the UK government is very supportive of that. So it's gone through a whole transition to the point at which now in the UK it is very well discussed. And in fact, the Holocaust Memorial Day that's just passed in the UK, the number of events went up from 550 to 850 this year.
Wow.
So the public is taking this very seriously and are very motivated, which is good to hear.
A different question. The Shoah Foundation was founded to document Holocaust survivor stories, everybody's story, in effect. It's an amazing project. It won't be terribly long before the last survivor passes away. What kind of an effect do you think that will have?
Well, we think about that every day, as you can imagine. I mean, the whole vision of Steven Spielberg was to make sure that as those voices were preserved in perpetuity. And as he reminds me, look, Steven, we need to make sure we keep that promise to the survivors that their testimonies will be preserved in perpetuity. And that has been fulfilled through the Shoah Foundation Institute. We know of the 52,000 survivors in the database, we know that around about 20,000 of them have passed away so far. It could be slightly higher than that. That's just the ones we know about. So around about half. That will rapidly increase over the next 5 to 10 years. We think a lot about it, and so we're spending a lot of time working on, for example, creating new educational tools. First of all, we teach teachers. And the second thing we do is create resources from the Archive of Testimonies that students can use in class. And in fact, next year, we're going to be launching a brand new educational tool called Eyewitness, and it enables students to be able to delve into the archive and to make their own schoolwork and history projects and their projects for maybe when they're doing religion or ethics or so on around the archive. And so those voices will live on. Another project we're looking at doing is creating a virtual classroom where we're interviewing survivors now in the same way that Holocaust survivors might go into a classroom today and give a short testimony and then answer questions. We're repeating that by capturing it on film and then asking the survivor not 5 or 10 questions like they might get in a classroom, but asking them 200 questions of all sorts. And what it means is that later on, as the years go by, and survivors are maybe too old or no longer there to go into classrooms, that whole experience will be captured. It's not the same thing as being with a real person and talking to a real person, but we're just trying to make sure we capture the essence of that experience the best way we can for the future.
Do you think that what motivated you to get interested in the Shoah and documenting the Holocaust is a more universal idea than specifically to the persecution of the Jews?
Well, for me, it started very much with the persecution of the Jews. What I was very aware of was that people seemed to think that the Holocaust was a Jewish issue. And I said, you know, actually, while this is an immense tragedy for the Jewish community and it will be indelibly printed on the minds, the lives and the hearts of generations of the Jewish community to come, actually, this was not the making of the Jewish community. Anti-Semitism emerged out of West European civilization. So my question was, where is everybody else? How is it the Jews are left to carry the burden of this when it really was not their making? So in a way, it was very specific for me that it was a responsibility to address and to the specific persecution of the Jews of Europe. And once you do that, you then set a principle. And the principle is that I, as a human being, have universal obligations and responsibilities to other people, whoever they are. And they equally apply for Jews to looking at the rest of the world, or for Christians looking, you know, out at their communities around them, or Muslims and their world. You know, it applies to all of us. And I think if we can keep that principle at heart, there's no conflict between being very specific and also drawing universal lessons. And that's why I do get very involved in, and the Shoah Foundation Institute will be taking testimonies of survivors in Rwanda and Cambodia and Guatemala, because their voices, as a voice of humanity, are important to be heard too.
You know, I should have noted that you were the project director responsible for creating the Kigali Memorial Center in Rwanda.
Yes, and it was a very moving experience working there, Sam, because I was working with survivors of genocide who were not 50 years older than me. They were 10 years younger than me.
Yeah.
And that was a very challenging experience, because then I realized I was the one. I wasn't looking back at the past and saying, well, somebody should have done something to rescue the Jews. Somebody should have used their voice to rescue the Jews. Suddenly it was, I should have done something to speak out about Rwanda. And that was the real challenge there, because I realized that those young people had suffered at a time when I was an adult member, a voting member of the British public, and my government, along with many other governments in the world, let them down. And so that's where the universal lesson is. Each of us in our own time and our own age has something to respond to. And I think the testimonies at the USC Shoah Foundation are trying to say to young people, think. Think now, because in future you will see this again. The Jews suffered this 60 years ago, but the survivors are very, very clear in their testimonies. Think about who you are, about how you behave, and make sure that you are not the one that's being either a victim, a perpetrator, or a bystander and use your voice in whichever situation you find yourself.
It's a powerful and important message. You spoke a little bit about the changing quality of anti-Semitism. You know, it wasn't the same thing. Christian anti-Semitism in the Middle Ages wasn't really the same thing as Nazi anti-Semitism.
Right.
And there's new anti-Semitisms arising. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I think there's a couple of things we really need to be alert to. Islam as a religion is not a violent religion. However, there are a good number of people who are Muslim who misrepresent their tradition and are highly violent and in particular anti-Semitic. What we're seeing also is a very nasty, I think is the only word one can call it, a very difficult and challenging collaboration between the far left and the far right over the issue of Israel. And the attack on Israel as a nation state actually very often is a guise for attack on Jews, whoever they are and wherever they may be. And we need to be very alert to this. It's extremely important, though, that within the Jewish community, and I include myself in that, that we do not become fearful or paranoid over this. What we need to do is be outgoing. We need to find our friends, because there are many of them, and we need to cultivate them, because actually most people that I come across are open and fair-minded, maybe sometimes are ignorant and need to be informed, but we will not win this if we go in under our shells and think that there's a huge big danger out there. The best thing we can do is to inform. And that's again why in our work in education we try to use the testimonies. One of the things that survivors of the Holocaust can do, they can talk to us about anti-Semitism and how it affected them and in a very effective way. And what I see is that those people, those now elderly people, who experienced the really, really dire consequences, traumatic consequences of anti-Semitism, are the ones that are out in the schools working with the young people to tackle that today. And in particular, they see the real value of working, for example, with Muslim young people, because they know that ultimately they're just young people that have got to make choices and decisions and are helping to inform those choices. And I think that's a great role model.
I want to thank Stephen Smith, the executive director of the USC Shoah Foundation, for a great visit here on Too Jewish. People can find out a great deal more about the Shoah Foundation's work by going to the website, which is through USC, but I think there's another website address.
usc.edu/VHI.
And you can also search for the USC Shoah Foundation, because nowadays, you know, if you can't find it on Google, it doesn't exist. Stephen, thank you for a great and illuminating visit here on Too Jewish.
It's been a real pleasure, Tom. Thank you very much.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Temple Emmanuel and the Tucson Hebrew Academy are proud to introduce a great new learning opportunity for the whole family, the Taste of Judaism Family Class, Sundays, August 15th, 22nd, and 29th at 1 p.m. At the Taste of Judaism Family Class, adults enjoy an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community, led by Temple Emmanuel's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Jason Holtz. Meanwhile, kids enjoy their own fun program of Jewish stories, crafts, and activities. Call 327-4501 to sign up. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish food. The sessions are free and open to all, Jewish or not. Taste of Judaism, celebrating its 10th year as the most successful outreach program in the country, welcomes you. Isn't it time you came? In addition to the family class at THA, Taste of Judaism sessions are offered in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson. Call Mila at 327-4501 for more information and to register today for the Taste of Judaism family class. Hasidic Jewish reggae sensation Matishyahu returns to the Rialto Theater on Monday, August 16th for an 8 p.m. show. Known for blending traditional Jewish themes with reggae, rock, and hip-hop beatboxing sounds, Matishyahu is a true original. This one-night-only concert features music from his new album, Light, and chart-topping singles King Without a Crown and Jerusalem Out of the Darkness Comes Light. Matishyahu's mix of Hebrew and English lyrics with a soulful reggae sound appeals to fans of all ages. Tickets are just $25 in advance or $27 at the door. Call the Rialto Theater box office at 740-1000 or visit rialtotheater.com.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community.
Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest for our 8th anniversary Too Jewish show, wow, 8 years of excellence to celebrate, will be Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords discussing immigration and Israel and astronauts, among other topics. Our playout this morning comes from Israeli-American singer Achinoam Nini, Noah, and her beautiful tune, Now Forget. My friends, have a great Sunday morning and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
Give me your pain, give me your sorrow, give me your loneliness and broken dreams, your bad times, your worry. Now forget, now forget. Your past, give me your family, give me the walls you build and the ones you break, your shadows and your longing. Now forget, now forget all that will be. Put it all in a small wooden box with a rusty old lock and the sparrows in flight. I'll guard it with my life.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.